Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury.
Jerry Dulac, let's get him now from the Steelers Radio Network, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Happy New Year, my good friend. So great to have you back.
Well, Steve, always good chatting with you. Happy New Year to you as well. And, of course, every time I hear your voice, it just takes me to Saturday afternoons in the fall. And it's always a treat to be with you. I will tell you, relative to that coach's son theory, I basically agree with you. And I saw the worst possible case scenario with Ralph Willard and his son Kevin, who is now a head coach, whereas Kevin was in between, and he treated him like a starter, and it caused problems with the rest of the team. So yeah, you either want to be Buddy Boeheim, or you want to be the guy who's helping out the collective GPA and coming in with 10 seconds to go.
Yeah, no question. That's why I'll tell you the one I look at right now before we get to the Steelers. I always find it interesting, the Iowa situation with the McCaffrey sons, because they're not the best, but they're, one starts, the other one comes out to be whatever. So I'll deal with that next Saturday when I get out there.
All right.
So the Steelers are in, and the news today is Clyde Edwards-Helaire is out. Tyreek Hill is in, and Juju Smith-Schuster might be in. So let's start with Juju. What do you know about him, Jerry?
Well, he has been cleared to play, and partly because he's really made a miraculous recovery. He healed very quickly. When they did the surgery on his shoulder, they did not think that he would play again this season, possibly in a postseason, but not even then. But he has healed very quickly, and he wants to play. Now, we shall see where he is in terms of conditioning. I think if he does play, it's going to be a limited amount. The Steelers are hoping he can play. I've been told yesterday they weren't planning on it. That doesn't mean that he won't play, but this is Juju, and this is his decision, and I think it points up a couple things which I've been told about him. One, this guy loves to play; he does not like to miss games. Two, he is a tough SOB; he plays that way, and he's cleared physically to play. But there's always that chance. Maybe you're just coming back a little too soon. Maybe. And three, he's a free agent, Steve, at the end of the year. So I'm sure he wants to show these teams that I'm good to go. By next year I'll be even better, but if I can play now, I'll be good next year. So there won't be any questions or doubts about how he comes back from that shoulder injury. But he has healed remarkably quickly, and that's why he's in the position that he is right now. I expect him to dress. This is more than just giving Kansas City something to think about, although I'm sure that's in play too. Maybe make their defensive coordinator, Steve Spagnuolo, spend a little extra time with what to do with their wide receiver sets if he plays. But I don't think he will go in there and play 52 plays. I think it's more likely he'll play 15 to 20 if he does. But I'm kind of expecting him to play.
I've always looked at the Melvin Ingram acquisition by Kansas City as a domino acquisition. That's just me. Where it took Chris Jones, who was a terrific defensive tackle, was forced to play end where he was a good end, and moved him back to defensive tackle where he's terrific. What kind of problem does that cause the Steeler offensive front that now Jones is more in his natural spot because of Ingram's presence?
Well, there's no question Chris Jones is the most dominant player on that defense. They have several very good players, including Tyrann Mathieu in the back end. Clark is pretty good as well. But Chris Jones is the one who makes that defense go. And when he was able to move back inside, that's when their defense started to kick in again. Where Melvin Ingram's presence is felt most is in the Steeler defense. And by that I mean not having him there, when they decided to trade him. And that's because he was unhappy wasn't that he was unhappy with his role per se. He was unhappy with his role because he felt he was his role was misrepresented to him when he signed here. Basically, that he felt lied to, and that's why he wanted out. And so, you know, when they signed him, I thought that was the perfect acquisition—a veteran, former Pro Bowler who could come in and play 20, 25 snaps, and there not be a big drop off when he comes into the game. And after Bud Dupree left and Alex Highsmith moved up to the starting spot opposite T.J. Watt, I thought that was significant. Now, you know, from a resume standpoint, from a production standpoint, from what Mike Tomlin likes to call a body of work standpoint, Taco Charlton and Derek Tuska do not together don't equal Melvin Ingram. So I thought that was a big drop off when they traded him, but they felt they had no other choice. And he's played well. Now his numbers, you know, aren't staggering, but his presence, as you pointed up, has allowed Chris Jones to move back to where he's most effective.
All right. T.J. Watt obviously needs to be a factor. I felt any time I watched Kansas City this year, I know they were winning, but I'd love to know the next-gen stat, which usually doesn't interest me, but this one I'd be interested in. How many yards running around did Patrick Mahomes cover this year? I mean, every time I turned around, I felt like he was moving somewhere trying to get away from something. What can Watt mean in that realm, but what can it mean if Kansas City feels they need to chip with Travis Kelce before sending him out?
Yeah, you know, he's probably a 1,000-yard rusher for as much as he moves around and extends the play. You know, the funny thing is he is just as dangerous, maybe more dangerous, when he's out of the pocket. Moving around his mechanics, so obviously don't break down on the run. That's when he makes the biggest plays because the chaos in the secondary then exists because, you know, you're worried about where Tyreek Hill is. You know, their whole receiving crew is built on speed, so you're always worried about over the top. And so it's almost as though, as crazy as it sounds, it's almost as though you just want to let him sit in the pocket. And if he sits in a pocket and he's there 5 seconds, let him sit in a pocket and maybe hope T.J. Watt gets to him. Because when he starts, under pressure, he might even be better. And so I think where T.J. Watt can be effective is not just with pressure. But if you're going to get pressure, you better be able to touch him, hit him, and or bring him down. But I think the other important thing that's going to be a factor in this game, Steelers are going to have to get turnovers. They're going to have to take the ball away. They gave it to them 3 times the last time, and they just turned it into 17 points. The Steelers beat Tennessee because Tennessee gave it to them 4 times in their own territory. Right. Nothing outside the 41. The Steelers converted, even though they did nothing in terms of moving the ball after those takeaways, they still converted them into 4 field goals, 12 points in a 2019 game, and that's why they won. So they're going to have to not just win the turnover battle. They're going to have to take the ball away and not give the ball back at any points to the Chiefs if they want to win. And Steve, Steelers aren't going to win 37-31 or 34 or 37-34 or 34-31. If the Steelers win, it's going to be because of mistakes, blunders, lucky bounces, and they're going to win, 23-20, 22-19, right, that kind of game. That's the only way, to me, the Steelers can win this game because their offense just doesn't produce points.
They don't. Although, if I have the option, and I'm the Steelers, I want to be on the I want my offense on the field first. And the only reason I say that is I'm trying to reduce his possessions. And if I start with the ball, I've already taken him off the field for a possession.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Now, of course, I say they don't score points. They score points in the fourth quarter with Ben Roethlisberger, but they haven't scored points otherwise. But go back to the last game, Steve. The Chiefs deferred. Steelers went on the field. Second play of the game, Ben throws an 18-yard pass to Deontay Johnson for a first down. Then it's 3 plays, an out punt. They give the ball to the Chiefs at like their 24, 25, whatever it was. And 14 plays later, 8 passes by Mahomes. Bang, touchdown. And then you start factoring in the turnovers. There's 17 more points. And, you know, right off the bat, it's 23-0 at halftime, and they're done.
Yeah.
And so that's what they have to avoid. If they, you know, if they get the possession and if they win the toss, I think they'll probably defer. Maybe not. Maybe not. But they have, you know, and when I said about Mahomes, you know, with the 8 passes, you know, he converted 3 first downs on that opening drive. Well, that's what they're going to have to try to prevent. Easier said than done, I realize. But right off the bat, that's what happened. And they got, you know, they got behind the chains. They got behind the 8 ball. And, you know, you're just not going to recover, you know, for the most part, against a team like that.
Seriously, because I look at Kansas City and I feel like they can look at this game like quarter by quarter. You know, we're winning at the end of the quarter, we're winning at the half. I feel like the Steelers had to play this game possession by possession. Fair?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think they can look at it. I don't, you know, they can't sit there and say, well, we've been good in the fourth quarter. But what the Steelers do is they hang around, they keep the game close for the most part. Now, I say that. And yet 4 road games this year, they were blown out by halftime. Well, certainly 3 of them. Cincinnati 31-3, Minnesota 23-0, Kansas City 23-0, all at the half. And you know, L.A. against the Chargers, they came back in the fourth quarter, and at one point it was 31-3, I think it was. But at halftime it was a modest 21-10. That's not a big blowout for them.
Right.
But that's what they've been doing this year on the road, and yet they've always been a team that kind of keeps the game close, and obviously that's what they're going to try and do here. And you know, Steve, I mean, look at what Ben Roethlisberger has done. Has it been a great year for him? No, of course not. But when you look at what he's done in the fourth quarter, and a couple weeks ago he was still leading the league in fourth quarter passing.
Yep.
But of their 9 victories, 7 have been because of his comeback drives in the fourth quarter, and we saw that last week against Baltimore, not just the game winner in what they thought was the game winner in the fourth quarter, but the game winning drive again then in overtime. And his, you know, he throws for 95 yards for 3 quarters, and then he completes 15 of his last 19 for 149 yards, 2 game winning drives, if you will, and they win the ball game. And it's really, you know, it's really remarkable to see at age 39 in a year where, you know, again, statistically not very good, what he's been able to do in the fourth quarter, really, you know, magical, of course, is a strong term, but it's really been kind of nice to see for his sake and somewhat remarkable as well.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, totally. So the final question I'll ask to you is this, okay, why the fourth quarter? What is different in the fourth quarter than the other 3 quarters? And I don't mean just for him, but I mean for the offense in general.
Well, for the offense in general, it's him just taking control. It's
right.
him calling the plays. It's him going no huddle. It's him, you know, the touchdown last week to Chase Claypool. You know, Ben changed his play at the line of scrimmage. The funny thing about that is that, you know, the two tight ends didn't get the change. And so if you notice on that touchdown, he hit this just a little bit because he realized, wait a minute, those guys ran the pattern for the other play. And right. so then Claypool, of course, you know, got the change of the signal, and he threw the touchdown to him. So that's the change in the offense. And the change in Ben, there is no change in Ben. Well, let me say this. There's a change in how he plays, but it's just hard to explain. He knows he's a slow starter. Now, that goes beyond being a slow starter. But, Steve, that's his signature. You know, only one quarterback in history has more game-winning drives, and only 2 have more fourth-quarter comebacks. And one of them is Tom Brady in each category, and Peyton Manning's the other.
Right.
So Elway, Marino, Kelly, you go right down the list. None of them have had more fourth-quarter comebacks than this guy. That's his signature. And when the game is on the line, that's when he is at his best, and that's when he's at his calmest. And it really is. It's remarkable to see. And I think this year, considering how poorly they've played, and at his age, that in that fourth quarter he is still doing that 7 times already this year, most in his career, is remarkable.
There'll be some Steeler fans that will look at when he's not there and finally will understand what they're missing.
That's exactly right. Last week of being a perfect example.
Yep. I mean, that, I've said this for years. I said they've had a lot of great players. He's the one guy they couldn't lose.
That's exactly right.
Jerry, always a pleasure. Thank you, my friend. Great work, as always. We appreciate you so much.
Well, Steve, thank you, and I'll look forward to our next chat.
Yes, very much so. All right. Thanks, Jerry.
All right, Steve. See you, man.